Good morning. Welcome to Post-Election Blues. We had a Zazen Kai yesterday, and many of us were able to take refuge in a quiet community, trying to find within ourselves some kind of ease and joy in our life, because so much that is being reflected to us in the media and in the world is so filled with anger and fear that it is so good to come back to our own breath and recognize that we have lives to live. We have responsibilities to face of our own. Also yesterday, we had what we call new student entry. We had formal students, 8 people who sat all day on Friday and were able to sit quietly all day and consider how being in this community and practicing Zen, how that will affect their lives. So it was wonderful. We do that twice a year. We have new student entry, and it was a beautiful thing. I think, you know, now more than ever, we want to look at how our lives can make a difference in the world that we live in. Sometimes we forget that. We get caught up in different stories about our lives, but at times like this, we're much more aware that we, each one of us, needs to pay attention to our own personal responsibility. How to live in such a time as we are living in. You know, Dogen, who if we were Christians, we'd say would be the patron saint of our tradition. For those of you unfamiliar with Dogen, he was a 13th century Zen philosopher, monk, who pretty much was the founder of our version of Buddhist practice here, of the Soto Zen tradition. He wrote a lot about how to live a life. I think that's what he was writing about in all his writings. And his primary text that we look at is called Genjo Koan. It's usually translated as actualizing the main point or the issue at hand. I've been working with this koan, Genjo Koan's, this short piece of writing for many years, and I've titled it personally, I think of it as showing up. Showing up. So, in the midst of all of these political storms and encountering my own anger and fears, I have come back to this text because it helps me to right my ship, so that my ship I always think of as like a little. Not even a rowboat, but just kind of a very simple little boat that goes across the river of suffering and tries to help other people get across, right? So how do we live our lives and actualize our lives in this time with the election outcome? So Dogen says in the first 4 lines of this piece, I'm going to read to you and then I'll talk about each of the lines. As all things are Buddha Dharma, there are delusion, realization, practice, birth and death, Buddhas and sentient beings. As myriad things are without an abiding self, there is no delusion, no realization, no Buddha, no sentient beings, no birth, and no death. The Buddha way, in essence, is leaping clear of abundance and lack. Thus, there are birth and death, delusion and realization, sentient beings and Buddhas. Yet, in attachment, blossoms fall, and in aversion, weeds spread. A fourfold perspective on living our life. It begins it with, you know, all things are the Buddha Dharma. And from that perspective, there's delusion, realization, practice, birth and death, Buddhas, and sentient beings. In that perspective, it's probably what most of us walked in the door with. We see the world in each of its parts. And we know this is our life. This is Sunday morning. I am at the Zendo with my community. It's Wednesday afternoon. I'm gone swimming. So the first line is about our ordinary life. In the Buddha Dharma, in the teaching of the Buddha, of awakening, we see the beauty and we see the ugliness. We see the joy and the suffering. All the aspects of life. We are not blind to them. They are our life. And because of that, we grasp and we want things our way. And we push away and deny what we don't want. And in that way that we grasp and push away, we create suffering in our own selves. And we also create suffering in others by our aversion and our attachment. So all that is in that first line. Delusion, realization, practice, birth and death, Buddhas and sentient beings, all of it. Part of life. Part of life. What we are experiencing now. Part of life. But he shifts it in the second line and says, oh, but don't forget. As myriad things, as all the things, are without an abiding self, there is no delusion, no realization, no Buddha, no sentient being, no birth and death. It's a wholly different perspective. Sometimes it's called the perspective of emptiness. Huh? Since each of us, right now, are constantly shifting and changing. We're not the same ones that walked into this through those doors, however long ago that was. There is no continuous abiding self that is just this. There's a way to see and experience the world where there's just undelineated stuff flowing in and out of different capacities. Where me flows in to the air, and the air flows into me. You know, that's what, you know, we don't like the term emptiness because it sounds like, oh no, I want stuff. We don't like to hear about that. But, you know, the whole thing is hypothetical. Our whole lives are hypothetical. This is my best guess about who I am and who you are and who we are in this moment, given the fact that the Earth is revolving and around the sun and it's rotating and all of these things are going on. But we have a fixed idea about the way things are, and we forget this other aspect of reality. It's just alive and changing constantly, and nothing is fixed. We try to come to the center of anything, it's empty of a separate existence. It's an hypothesis. We fail to see the invisible lines that connect us all here, right now, in this room. We don't see them, but they're there. And out the window, all the way up to 55th Avenue, whatever street that is up there, 56 or, yeah, it's all connected. We forget that. So we're in kind of like, you know, I always feel a little dreamy when I get into this second line. I feel a little dreamy when I talk about or think about emptiness, a different aspect of reality. So Dogen makes sure that we don't get too dreamy with his next line, which says, the Buddha way, in essence, is leaping clear of abundance and lack. So neither the first line nor the second line. Thus, there are birth and death, delusion and realization, sentient beings and Buddhas, affordable care, and immigration acts. Also, oh, he didn't exactly say those lines. That's his point. Encouraging us to live fully, not attaching to the idea of oneness, nor the idea of emptiness. Leap clear, he says. I love that. Leaping clear. The word in Japanese, I can't remember what the word is, but it is the same word that you use when a fish flops, jumps out of the water. So it's got that slapping sound to it. It's great. Leaping clear of abundance and lack. Leaping clear of the idea of this is it or not it. What happens when we leap clear of both of those things? We meet the reality of our lives. And so intimately and warmly, he finishes this four lines with, yet in attachment blossoms fall, and in aversion weeds spread. In the last few days, so many of us have seen our attachment to the way things should be negated. Our attachment so strong that people have been devastated. But we have to recognize that, I'm the first one. I was so sure of the outcome of this election, I went to bed early because I was fine with that. And when I woke up at 5 and picked up my cell phone to see what time it was, it said President-elect Trump. And, you know, I was essentially incapable of anything all day Wednesday. It wouldn't go in. My attachments were so strong. The wall was so strong. It was like my complete identity. I felt like my identity had been snatched away from me. In attachment, blossoms fall in aversion. In aversion, believe me, so many of us have felt, weeds spread. See the weeds growing up. My attachment to Obama's studied leadership, principled leadership, to his efforts for immigration reform, the Paris agreements, affordable care, the pardoning of prisoners. He's pardoned more prisoners than any president ever. So when we see our attachment to these blossoms of how we think the world should be, and we see the blossoms fall, no surprise, that our aversion arises and weeds spring up in our minds. I was brought up in a kind of brutal world. Personally, I mean, I'm sure most of you have stories, but you know, I attended bullfights as a child, and so hunted with one of my stepfathers. You know, I had a lot of violence, and so when I become angry, I have these, you know, images that come to me that are quite violent from my childhood. Those are those weeds that are coming up. Because they are not useful. They are not skillful. I'll have to acknowledge them and then come back to what is a skillful response to the aversion that I feel, to the loss that I feel. The vulgarity and disrespect I've seen in the election process, the way those who could be called different are treated, frightens me and scares me, makes me want to protect. So I think it's natural that as humans we feel these aversions. The question is, how do we meet them skillfully? How do we meet this moment in our lives when it feels like weeds are spreading everywhere, inside us and outside us? How can we use the energy of loss, of not getting what we want, and push that energy into serving what is true and just? There will be many people and many groups that will need us now. We will need to support a lot of people that will be losing support. So I think we have to take responsibility for where we are, where we have been born in this life, and where we are now in our society and in our world. How can we care for those in need? So very directly, through organizing, demonstrating, donating, supporting. This is not some abstract thing we do, you know, looking out the window. We're called to action now. We're all called to action. We can't shirk our responsibilities. Because we live in this country, it is so important to act. So we have to, shake off the disruption and shock and offer what we can, and each of us will offer something very, very different. Very, very different, given our skills, our resources, who we might run into on the street, or in our schools, or work, or in a pub. How we use our resources will be very different, but we must not shirk our responsibility now. So I have a silly Zen koan about disruption and taking responsibility that I thought, it just came up to me as I was thinking about how to position myself. Part of me wants to, escape to Canada and live in Montreal. I have a whole story about that. And yet, what to do? So this story is very short. It is about something disruptive that happened in a Chinese Zen monastery some thousand years ago. A government minister, whose name was Minister, Government Minister Tai, came to visit a monastery that he helped to support. So he was a strong supporter of this place. And he was also a Zen master, but he worked in government. Was not a monk. And he was invited to a tea ceremony with the vice abbot of the monastery, Myosho. Now, I think you're all familiar with the Japanese tea ceremony and how elegant and specific and aesthetic and correct and like a dance it is. In fact, that ceremony derived from the Chinese tea ceremony, which was equally elegant, precise, and aesthetically pleasing. There's places in China where the Japanese went back to reteach it in the 20th century after Mao to bring what was from China back to China. So at this time, it was in very high form. Awareness, aesthetic appreciation, and it was like a classical dance, really. And was said to express the heart of mindfulness and awareness and the Dharma. So, thank you for the tea. So, I try and remember one of the customs in tea ceremony is to turn the cup so that everybody sees the best part of the cup. So you turn the cup around so that everyone can see what's there, and then you drink. And I like to talk about that. This little part here where a piece of carbon is my favorite part of this. So I always like to show it to the community before I drink. So the government minister was sitting in his proper seat, and the vice abbot was sitting, and they were waiting for the tea to be served by the senior student, Ro. And just as the senior student stepped forth with the tea kettle, it fell. Onto the straw mats. In pieces, tea everywhere, sound of tea. Doesn't say it in the story, but I just imagine splashes of it on the robes of the government minister and the vice abbot. That was sort of what it was like when I reached for my cell phone at 5 a.m. That's what made me think of this koan. It was just like, ah, fuck. Thundering disruption. President-elect Trump. I felt fear, disbelief, hopes and plans blasted, as if the smooth blue plane of my understanding of the world had been broken. A broken tea kettle with hot tea flowing all over it, breaking all of my understanding of how the world is and would be. Dogen's, yet in attachment blossoms fall, and in aversion weeds spread. It's obvious why I chose this today. In the tea room, the government minister Tai and vice abbot Myosho stare at the ruined teapot, the wet straw mats, the steaming tea flowing in waves toward them. And poor senior student Ro stands there. I just imagine his face as he looks on the scene. And just then, the government minister, Tai, looks at the senior students and says, "Hey, what's under the tea kettle?" And, you know, in these koans, the way they work is that there's a koan and there's a story, and then there's someone 100 years later who wrote little comments about it, one of the collectors, and he wrote, "As it turns out, it's trouble under the kettle." So this, what's under the tea kettle, reminds me of what's been going on in my mind, and I'm sure yours too, and on your devices, and on what you read. Was the outcome of the election due to racism, misogyny, healthcare, industrialization, anti-globalization, Clinton's campaign, media distortion? Have you been doing that? What's under the tea kettle? The senior student didn't know what to say when he's asked, "What's under the tea kettle?" So he said, "It's the god of the hearth." That's like our saying, "Don't know. Nothing I can do about this." The minister replied to him right away. He said, "If it's the god of the hearth dwelling there, then how was it the kettle was overturned? So who's responsible here?" We ask ourselves. Was it the senior student or the god of the hearth? Could I have done more for this election? I did a little bit more for Obama. Not a lot more, but a little bit more. Would it have made any difference? Could I have done something different? I, just me? Just you? Well, anyway, the senior student is flustered when he's asked by the minister, "If the god of the hearth is dwelling there, then how did this happen?" He says, he responds, "You can serve as an official for 1,000 days, but in a single instant, you can lose everything." Well, things happen. We didn't expect Florida. We didn't expect Michigan. Things happen. The minister was not impressed with that answer. He shook his sleeves. This is what they did in China. And very often in the koans, they say, shook his sleeves and left. What was he reacting to? What was wrong with what the senior student said? Avoiding responsibility, blaming the spirits in the kettle. Hey, that's just the way it is. Finally, the old vice abbot looks at his senior student. You know, he's very embarrassed because his main funder is just left mad. and he scolds him. He says, the vice abbot is talking to the senior student. You've been taking your rice here at the temple a long time, but you still go off north on the Yangtze River to gather wood. Saying, you're ignoring the obvious, what is right here, your responsibility for the spill. By being here and alive today, I think we all need to take responsibility for what's happened in our country. And we need to find ways to support and create a caring community that will inevitably be endangered by the Trump administration. We need to blame more than chance or luck or the Russians or Comey or Clinton herself for what has happened. We have to take responsibility. And as the Brits say, carry on. We need to work with groups devoted to social justice, to prison reform, to prison justice, to women's health, media ethics, climate change. You add another line to my list. Each of you knows something that needs to be taken care of. In the verse to this koan, there's the line, how many times I've gone through the waves of adverse currents. We are in such a place now. It feels more frightening than Reagan did, for those of us old enough to remember that. It feels more frightening than Bush 1 and Bush 2. How many times I've gone through the waves of adverse currents. Or Dogen says, yet in attachments blossoms fall, and in aversion weeds spread. We are sad, and there's much to do. The currents are adverse now. We can turn them. Here's my encouraging gatha, which I hope you take to heart. Adverse currents seem now to carry us in a direction we fear, but as we swim, we gain strength, pulling others along with us to the calmer waters where we will again offer nourishment and wisdom and compassion. Take heart. We've got so much to do.